All right, well, let's go ahead and get started with our second hour of Bible study, and we're picking up on the subject of Deuteronomy chapter 15, verses 1 through 11. Deuteronomy 15, verses 1 through 11. So last time we were studying through Deuteronomy, we had covered the section in Deuteronomy 14 pertaining to the dietary laws, and then also as it pertained to the tithing. And the tithing was interesting because the tithing was brought once a year. It consisted of the produce of the ground, and it was brought to the place that the Lord decided. It was first at the tabernacle, later at the temple, once that was created or built by Solomon. And basically, the landowner who had a yield was to take 10% of his herds and crops and was to bring it to the place that the Lord had decided, again at the tabernacle or the temple, and was basically supposed to eat that meal in the presence of the Lord, and he was to eat whatever his heart desired. And this included a wine and strong drink, and basically he was to take 10% of his annual salary and in effect celebrate in the presence of the Lord by consuming it. And this would include family, it would include friends, it would include the Levite in the community who, remember, was dependent upon the contributions of those in the community who owned land. And then we also looked at the tithe that was taken every third year. And rather than being brought to the tabernacle or to the temple, it was to be brought to the town where the landowners lived, where they produced these crops, and it was to be administered or given to the poor in the community, to the widows, to the orphans, to the alien who resided in their midst. And so this was intended to be for their consumption as well, and for the Levites as well. So the tithe was a very interesting study that we went through last week, and so I don't want to repeat all that. But we are moving into a discussion pertaining to forgiveness of debt, of loans, as it were, to the poor. So let me read through Deuteronomy 15, verses 1 through 11, and then we'll come back and look at it a little more carefully. So I'm reading from the New American Standard, the New American Standard Bible, 1995 update. At the end of every 7 years, you shall grant a remission of debts. This is the manner of remission. Every creditor shall release what he has loaned to his neighbor. He shall not exact it of his neighbor and his brother, because the Lord's remission has been proclaimed. From a foreigner you may exact it, but your hand shall release whatever of yours is with your brother. However, there will be no poor among you, since the Lord will surely bless you in the land which the Lord your God is giving you as an inheritance to possess. If only you listen obediently to the voice of the Lord your God, to observe carefully all this commandment which I am commanding you today. For the Lord your God will bless you as he has promised you, and you will lend to many nations, but you will not borrow, and you will rule over many nations, but they will not rule over you. And if there is a poor man with you, one of your brothers, in any of your towns, in your land, which the Lord your God is giving you, you shall not harden your heart nor close your hand from your poor brother. But you shall freely open your hand to him and shall generously lend him sufficient for his need and whatever he lacks. Beware that there is no base thought in your heart, saying, the seventh year, the year of remission, is near, and your eye is hostile toward your poor brother, and you give him nothing. Then he may cry to the Lord against you, and it will be sin in you. And you shall generously give to him, and your heart shall not be grieved when you give to him, because for this thing the Lord your God will bless you in all your work and in all your undertakings. For the poor will never cease to be in the land. Therefore I command you, saying, you shall freely open your hand to your brother, to your needy and poor in your land. All right, so let's work through this a little more carefully here and see if we can make sense of what's going on. Now, I'm going to be operating off the notes here. And so Moses starts off in Deuteronomy 15:1. He says, at the end of every 7 years, you shall grant a remission of debts. Now, this 7 years, this is going to be the sabbatical year cycle. And so basically, God set up Israel on a 7-day work week, but he also set them up on a 7-year cycle. And so at the end of every 7 years, he says, you shall grant a remission of debts. And the word remission here translates the Hebrew word shmitah, which means a letting drop or letting go of something. And this forgiveness occurred every 7 years when the Feast of Booths was celebrated. Go with me over to Deuteronomy 31:10. Deuteronomy 31:10. So this year of remission of debts occurred every 7 years at the time when the Feast of Booths was celebrated. And in Deuteronomy 31 and 10, it says, then Moses commanded them, saying, at the end of every 7 years, at the time of the remission of debts, at the Feast of Booths. So notice there, he clearly sets the time for the remission of debt with the Feast of Booths. By the way, let me read verse 11 as well. He says, when all Israel comes to appear before the Lord your God at the place which he will choose, you shall read this law in front of all Israel in their hearing. So not only did they gather together, not only was this year for the release of debt, but this was a time when Israel came together before the Lord at the place which he would choose. Again, this was first the tabernacle because it was a mobile unit, but then later on it became the temple itself. And so when they came together, they were to celebrate the Feast of Booths, and this was to be a year of forgiveness of loans. Of any debt that was remaining, it was forgiven. But this was also a time when the priest would read the law. So the people would gather together. Notice verse 11. And he says, and you shall read this law in front of all Israel in their hearing. So what you had was the priests were to come forth and they were to read the book of Deuteronomy to the entire nation, as it were, to everybody who came to participate. And so we might say that they had a Bible conference every 7 years where they would come together and the priests would read the law in front of all Israel in their hearing. But again, going back to the notes here in Deuteronomy 15:1, this remission of debt was to occur every 7 years. So this was a recurring cycle. And it was a very specific year when this happened. And in verse 2, he says, this is the manner of remission. Every creditor shall release what he has loaned to his neighbor. He shall not exact it of his neighbor and his brother because the Lord's remission has been proclaimed. So what we have here is a divine command to forgive loans. A divine command to forgive loans. Now he says, from a foreigner. Now the foreigner was the Nachri. This was the person who was not the alien. The alien was the ger. The ger was the resident who had was the person who came in, the non-Israelite who came into the nation and took up residence there. That was the ger. That was the alien who resided among them. And in effect, he was one who had converted to Judaism, we might say. And he was identified with the covenant community. But the foreigner. We don't know a whole lot about him, but the Nachri, as he's described here, as he's called the foreigner, he was not part of the covenant community. And so he was outside. So the law, and this is interesting to note here, so the Mosaic law and this particular law, like all the laws, would have only related to those who were part of the covenant community. This would not relate to the foreigner. This would not relate to the person who maybe interacted with Israel. Maybe it was a businessman, a traveler. But nonetheless, he says, from a foreigner, you may exact it. In other words, the 7-year rule of forgiveness of debt did not apply to those outside of the covenant community. So again, verse 3, from a foreigner, you may exact it. But your hand shall release whatever of yours is with your brother. And so that is the person who is within the covenant community. And what we have here is a divine form of discrimination, a divine sanction, a divinely sanctioned discrimination between those who are part of the covenant community and those who are not. And verse 4, he says, however, there will be no poor among you. Now, when he says there will be no poor among you, this is set in contrast to verse 11, which says you will always have the poor, that they will never cease to be in the land. But what we have here in verse 4, when he says, for there will be no poor among you, this was an ideal situation. This was if Israel proved to be faithful to the Lord. Because if Israel proved to be faithful to the Lord, if they were obedient to the Lord as a nation, then God would bless them to such a degree that in effect poverty would be removed within the land. So he says, however, there will be no poor among you. But as we're about to see, that's going to be conditioned on their obedience, because verse 5 is going to make that very clear. So he says, there will be no poor among you, since the Lord will surely bless you in the land which the Lord your God is giving you as an inheritance to possess. Now, Moses, because he is a man of repetition, as he begins to talk about Israel's behavior towards their fellow Israelites, he repeatedly reminds them that they are blessed by the Lord, that it is the Lord your God who is giving you this land as an inheritance, that he will bless you in the land which the Lord your God is giving you as an inheritance. In fact, I put in here in the notes the scripture references where that phrase occurs again and again and again and again and again, because our man Moses really likes repetition. In fact, let me read through these. In Deuteronomy 4:21, it says, now the Lord was angry with me on your account and swore that I would not cross the Jordan and that I would not enter the good land which the Lord your God is giving you as an inheritance. Deuteronomy 4:40, he says, so you shall keep his commandments, his statutes and his commandments, which I am giving you today, that it may go well with you and with your children after you, and that you may live long on the land which the Lord your God is giving you. Deuteronomy 9:6, know then it is not because of your righteousness that the Lord your God is giving you the good land to possess. Deuteronomy 11:31, for you are about to cross the Jordan to go in to possess the land which the Lord your God is giving you. Deuteronomy 12:9 and 10, for you have not as yet come to the resting place and the inheritance which the Lord your God is giving you. When you cross the Jordan and live in the land which the Lord your God is giving you to inherit it, and he gives you rest from all your enemies around you so that you live in security. Deuteronomy 13:12, if you hear in one of your cities which the Lord your God is giving you to live in. Deuteronomy 15:7, if there is a poor man with you, one of your brothers in any of your towns in your land which the Lord your God is giving you. Deuteronomy 16:5, you are not allowed to sacrifice the Passover in any of your towns which the Lord your God is giving you. And you see the pattern here. Moses keeps bringing up this point that they are going into the land that the Lord, their God, is giving to them. And he's driving that point. And repetition does that. Repetition makes a statement. It drives a point. And that's what Moses does here. He likes to repeat himself because he's trying to keep that in the stream of their consciousness. He wants them to think about how I relate to others should reflect how I relate to God, and the fact that God has blessed me with all of this blessing, with this land, with my health, my wealth, just everything in my life. And so by putting that repeatedly into their thinking, that vertical aspect, relationship with the Lord and the blessing that comes from the Lord, then that would in turn play into how they thought about others. Because really what they were, if I could use this term, is that they were stewards. The land was never really ultimately theirs. In fact, if they acted like the Canaanites, God would drive them out of the land. In fact, that's what he did at a later time because they turned from the Lord and began to practice the practices of the Canaanites, even engaging in child sacrifice, and eventually God removed them from the land. But they were to see themselves as stewards. Stewards of God's blessing. And so they were to be very generous and open-handed. But Moses keeps driving this point because how he wants them to think about their poor brothers and sisters in Christ and how they related to others was to be directly in relationship with regard to their relationship to God. They were to think about their relationship to him and the fact that he had blessed them so much. But notice going on in the notes here in verse 5, we have at the beginning of Deuteronomy 15:5 the word if. So when he says that there will be no poor among you, it is followed by this conditional clause, if only you listen obediently to the voice of the Lord your God to observe carefully all this commandment which I am commanding you today. So the blessing was conditioned on obedience. And we've talked about this before, that the Mosaic Covenant is a bilateral covenant relationship. It is a conditional covenant where they were in a relationship with God, and that was based on the unconditional aspects of the Abrahamic covenant. But in the Mosaic Covenant, the blessing and cursing of being in the land was conditioned upon obedience or disobedience. And we're really going to see that point emphasized when we get to Deuteronomy 28. But here we have a conditional clause. So it's this, if only you listen obediently to the voice of the Lord your God to observe carefully all this commandment which I'm commanding you today. Verse 6, for the Lord your God will bless you as he has promised you. So he will give them wealth, and you will lend to many nations, that is to Gentile nations, but you will not borrow. You see, if they were obedient, not only would God bless them, but it would put them in a place to where they could lend but not borrow. And so they would have financial superiority. And he says, and you will rule over many nations, but they will not rule over you. So they would also have military superiority as well. Now in verse 7, he picks up on the subject of the poor. He says, if there is a poor man with you, one of your brothers, in any of your towns, in your land, which the Lord your God is giving you, you shall not harden your heart, nor close your hand from your poor brother. Now notice he says, you shall not harden your heart. Moses is very concerned with the inward attitude. He's very concerned with their heart. And he says that over and over again. We talked about the subject of the heart and how Moses repeatedly keeps bringing up the subject of their inward heart. Because look, you can set forth laws. You can set forth laws and judgments that may seek to regulate behavior, but it doesn't really get into the heart. It really doesn't get inside the person. And Moses is concerned about the heart attitude, not just the outward observance, but he's concerned about the heart attitude that goes with it. But he says, you shall not harden your heart nor close your hand from your poor brother, but you shall freely open your hand to him. And that is with the idea of releasing God's resources, because remember, they had come into possession of God's resources through their obedience. God had blessed them in a number of ways, but they were in possession of God's resources. And so what they were to do was they were to be open-handed. They were to release, as a good steward, they were to release God's resources to others in the community. And he says, you shall freely open your hand to him, and you shall generously lend him sufficient for his need. And it was to be a loan according to his need, not his greed. And so he says here that he shall generously lend him sufficient for his need and whatever he lacks. And by the way, this was a loan. And it's perhaps thought that that the loan would help this poor person who had the ability to work and the opportunity to work, maybe to purchase some resources that he need, to purchase a plow, maybe some oxen, maybe some hired hands, maybe some seed, to be able to work himself. Whatever the industry was, whatever it was that he was going to be working in, the idea was that this was, in effect, a business loan, that it was a loan that was given. And so he says, you shall generously lend him sufficient for his need in whatever he lacks. And then he says in verse 9, beware that there is no base thought in your heart. So again, going back to the issue of the mental attitude, because motives matter with God. It's not just outward observance, it's actually an attitude of the heart. But he says, beware that there is no base thought in your heart, saying, the seventh year, the year of remission, is near. And so this was the year in which there was forgiveness of loans, that this was every seventh year at the Feast of Booths, remember. And so he says, and your eye is hostile toward your poor brother, and you give him nothing, and so withhold what he needs. Then he may cry to the Lord, and it will be a sin to you. So what was the concern here? The concern was that maybe you're in the fifth year, maybe you're in the sixth year, and somebody comes to you within the covenant community and needs a loan. And you look at the person and you say, okay, well, if I make the loan, then I can expect them to pay me back. And maybe the loan was in proportion to the remaining years within the seven-year cycle. But you give him a loan, say in the sixth year, and then the next year becomes the year of forgiveness. And you say, well, I've just lost my money now. In other words, I give him the loan, but by the end of the year, I have to forgive him. I have to let it go. And so in that sense, the loan becomes a gift. And so this is what Moses is addressing here, because there would be some that would say, no, I'm not going to give you that loan that you need, by the way, but I'm not going to give that to you because it means I'm not going to get it back. And so again in verse 9, he says, beware that there is no base thought in your heart, saying the seventh year, the year of remission, and your eye is hostile toward your poor brother, and you give him nothing. That is, you withhold what he needs. And then notice what he says here, then he may cry to the Lord against you. In other words, he may go to God and in effect file a complaint that this law has been violated. And one of the things we should understand is that when it came to the poor in the community, the law actually gave them rights under the law. For example, if you look at Proverbs 11:24 through 26, it says, there is one who scatters, that is, who gives away, and increases all the more. So the person who is generous and open-handed, who scatters, keeps increasing because God keeps blessing him. And there is one who withholds, catch this, what is justly due. Now, if something is justly due, it means that it is his by right under law, that he has a right, in effect, to ask for that. He says, there is one who withholds one what is justly due, and yet it results only in want. He says in verse 25, the generous man will be prosperous, and he who waters will himself be watered. And then in Proverbs 29:7, it says, the righteous is concerned for the rights of the poor. The rights of the poor. Because to say that they have rights assumes that they have rights under the law. In other words, these are legal rights that they have under the Mosaic law. So the righteous is concerned for the rights of the poor, but the wicked does not understand such concern. So when we think about this particular law, we should understand how this relates to the poor brother, because the command here is that if he is truly in need. Now, we'll talk about this here in just a minute, because one has to differentiate the person who is lazy or maybe is given to alcoholism or something, who may simply squander the money. We're assuming here that the person is able and that the need is legitimate. There's certain assumptions that are going on here, and I'll talk about that more later. But nonetheless, the command is that the prosperous Israelite was to give the loan to his poor, needy brother. And if it is withheld from him, then the poor person may go and may cry to the Lord against you. And notice what he says in the latter part of verse 9, and it will be a sin in you, that it will be a sin. Now remember that a sin was any violation of the law. In fact, we might substitute the word crime for the word sin, because it was a violation of the law. And when you break the law, you're a criminal. Is in effect, you have violated the law. And this is the law of God with regard to loaning to the poor and to the needy brother. And so if it was withheld from the poor and the needy brother, then that poor needy brother may go and cry to the Lord against them. And in that moment, it will be a sin in you. It will be a violation of the Lord's directive. And in verse 10, he says, you shall generously give to him. And again, this would be according to his need. He says, you shall generously give to him, and your heart shall not be grieved when you give to him. In other words, you're to have a right attitude. You don't do it grumbling. You know, the Lord loves a cheerful giver. Remember that. That's true to the New Testament. But he says, you shall generously give to him, and your heart shall not be grieved when you give to him, because for this thing, that is for this right act with a right attitude, because for this thing, the Lord your God will bless you in all your work and in all your undertakings. So God, who sees what is going on here, he sees the exchange between this poor, needy brother and this person who has the means to generously give. And when the attitude is right and the hand is open and the giving occurs, God sees this. And that's what Moses is saying here. He says, because for this thing, the Lord your God will bless you in all your work and in all your undertakings. So God will reward the giver because of his obedience to this directive with regard to his needy brother. Now, however, here's the reality of it, is that Israel would not obey the Lord fully. And what happens is because they would not obey the Lord, if they had, there would not have been any poor in the land, but they wouldn't. And so verse 11 speaks to the reality of the situation when he says, for the poor will never cease to be in your land. And this is because Israel would never fully obey the Lord. So Moses gives the ideal, the standard, which if obeyed would have in effect eliminated poverty within the nation of Israel. But because they did not obey, and he knew they would not obey, then there would always be the poor, would never cease to be in the land. But he closes out verse 11. He says, therefore I command you, saying, you shall freely open your hand to your brother, to your needy and poor in your land. All right, so let's take up the observations on this, and we'll chase down some other scriptures as well. So in this pericope, Moses continues his address concerning godly behavior toward fellow Israelites and the need to have a right heart attitude to be forgiving and open-handed. Now, this section assumes economic stratification within the Israelite community. Let me say that again. This section assumes economic stratification within the Israelite community. You would never have perfect equality. That's not what is pictured here. You are going to have people who are going to be more wealthy than others. And that is true for any free market economy. By the way, some have sought to use this verse and others to teach socialism and communism, which are purely evil systems. And in socialism and communism, the individual loses the right of their land, their property, their business, and their means of production. And it ultimately becomes the possession of the state. And this becomes, in effect, a form of thievery, is what it ultimately becomes. And so the state would then take it from them. But here, this calls for each individual within the nation who has the means to give. But it is a call to have a right attitude and an open hand to be giving towards those who are needy. But this calls for an individual response, not a societal response. People talk about societal responsibility. No, there is only the individual responsibility that each individual has before God and before others. And so again, this section assumes economic stratification within the Israelite community. Deuteronomy 15:1-6 pertains to forgiving loans to fellow Israelites based on the 7-year pattern set forth for the nation. And Deuteronomy 15:7-11 pertains to the attitude and actions that God expected of the blessed in Israel toward the poor, as they were to see them as a brother. Now, Moses does not address why the fellow Israelites may be poor, and it could be that they're poor because of poor lifestyle choices. It could be because of poor investments, but it only states that he is poor. It also assumes that those with the means should be open-handed in giving loans to help him succeed. Now Moses opens this pericope saying, at the end of every 7 years, you shall grant a remission of debts. And this is the manner of remission. Every creditor shall release what he has loaned to his neighbor. He shall not exact it of his neighbor and his brother, because the Lord's remission has been proclaimed. As I mentioned earlier, God had established a 7-year cycle that the nation was to follow. And this ended when the Feast of Booths was celebrated. Now, at the end of every 7 years, those Israelites who had made loans to others within the covenant community were to release them from any remaining debt. Now, the Hebrew word for remission is shmitah, which means a letting drop. Now, in my studies of several different Bible scholars from several different commentaries, some Bible scholars actually believe that the payment of loan was only suspended for the 7th year and then would resume afterwards. And there are some Bible scholars that do hold to that. And so, however, I don't think that's correct. Complete cancellation of loans seems more consistent with the spirit of Deuteronomy. As God had provided complete liberation from physical slavery and generously blessed his people. I have a good quote here from Dr. Eugene Merrill from his commentary on Deuteronomy, from the New American Commentary, which I like that New American Commentary series. Those are pretty good. But Dr. Eugene Merrill says, he says, the lender must simply forgive the debt as a necessary consequence of God's declaration of a time for canceling debts. He goes on, he says, this was, as already noted, at the end of 7 years, a period not necessarily commencing with the making of the loan, but as verse 9 makes clear, a universally recognized year of release. To protect both lender and borrower, the loan, one assumes, was of such an amount as to reasonably be repaid in whatever time remained until the year of cancellations. That is, the size of the loan was commensurate with the time to repay it, end quote. And I thought that was a pretty concise statement. Now, what we must remember is that Israel was an agricultural economy, and God required they follow a 7-year cycle to let the land rest every 7 years. So the way that they were supposed to do it was they were supposed to sow and harvest every 7 years. But on the 7th year, they were to let the land completely rest. They were not to sow or reap anything in the land. And so God required them every 7th year to let the land rest. This is called the Sabbath year, or sabbatical year, every 7th year. So not only were Israelites forgiven their debts in the 7th year, but the landowners were not to work their land. And what's interesting is that the poor were permitted to eat freely from whatever the ground produced. Go with me over to Exodus 23, verses 10 and 11. Exodus 23, verses 10 and 11. And in that section there, Moses writes, he says, you shall sow your land for 6 years and gather in its yield. But he says in verse 11, in Exodus 23:11, he says, but on the 7th year you shall let it rest and lie fallow. Now notice what happens here. When the land lies rest, it's going to naturally bring forth produce of whatever's growing in the fields. But they were not to cultivate the land. They were just simply to leave it alone. But verse 11 is very interesting. He says, but on the 7th year you shall let it rest and lie fallow, so that the needy of your people may eat, and whatever they leave, the beast of the field may eat. And you are to do the same with your vineyard and your olive grove. So basically, on the 7th year, the landowner was not to cultivate the land. He was not to plow the fields or sow or reap. He was just simply to leave it alone, hands off. And whatever grew up on the land, well, the needy could come in and they could eat from it. Throughout the year, they could come and pick the grapes or the olives or the fruit or whatever. They could help themselves to the land. It was theirs to go through in that 7th year and to just take whatever was in the land. What's interesting is God not only is concerned about the poor, he's even concerned about the animals, because he says whatever they leave, then the beast of the field can come in. So the cattle can come in, the herds of the flocks can come in. They can, all the animals can come in and they can eat what they want in the field as well. So it's wide open for them to eat whatever the ground naturally produces in the seventh year. Over in Leviticus 25, verses 3 through 7, we have other statements here, and I think this is pretty interesting. Let's go over there. In Leviticus 25, 3 through 7, he says, 6 years you shall sow your field, and 6 years you shall prune your vineyard and gather in its crop. But during the seventh year, the land shall have a Sabbath rest. The land itself was to rest. And so in the seventh year, the land shall have a Sabbath rest, a Sabbath to the Lord. You shall not sow your field nor prune your vineyard. Your harvest aftergrowth, in other words, whatever grows naturally there, your harvest aftergrowth you shall not reap, and your grapes of untrimmed vines you shall not gather. The land shall have a sabbatical year. And verse 6 says, all of you shall have the Sabbath products of the land for food. In other words, it was to be eaten by everybody, even the landowner. He says, yourself and your male and female servants and your hired man and your foreign resident, those who live as aliens with you, even your cattle and the animals that are in your land shall have all its crops to eat. So in the seventh year is just nobody, no working of the land. Again, it was to have a year of rest. The land is, God cares about the land. He cares about the poor. He cares about the animals. But the land itself was to have a rest from production. And this gets very interesting here. Now go with me over to Leviticus 25 verse 20. Same chapter, but Leviticus 25:20, because there might be some people who would be concerned about this, and they say, well, in the sixth year, when we pull in the harvest, if we don't sow in the seventh year, then we won't have anything for that year, no abundance, no controlled crop, as it were. But then we also have to sow at the eighth year, but we can't reap it until the end of the eighth and the early part of the ninth year, so you could see how they would be a few years without. And Moses addresses this in Leviticus 25:20. He says, but if you say, now here he's talking to the landowner, but if you say, what are we going to eat on the seventh year if we do not sow or gather in our crops? You see, this was a concern. So they said, well, what are we going to eat if we don't sow the land, if we don't cultivate the land and gather in our crops? What are we going to eat? And notice what is said here. God says, then I will so order my blessing for you in the sixth year, catch this, that it will bring forth the crop for 3 years. In other words, God controls the blessing. He controls the weather. He controls the rainfall. He controls the health of the ground and its ability to produce. And God says, if you will honor me, if you will obey my word in this seventh year, if you will let the land rest, then in the sixth year, he says, I will so order my blessing. And this speaks to the sovereignty of God to bless anybody at any time. He says, I will so order my blessing for you that in the sixth year, it will bring forth the crop for 3 years. Think about that. It will bring forth a threefold production. Verse 22, and when you are sowing the eighth year, you can still eat old things from the crop, eating the old until the ninth year when its crop comes in. Do you see that? That is just absolutely amazing. And so God not only brings forth the production in that sixth year such that it will bring forth a threefold enough crop to last for 3 years, but he will also preserve what is brought forth so that it will last until they get into that ninth year, that they can then reap what they have sown in the eighth year. Isn't that interesting? Isn't that very interesting? I love this about the Word of God. It's very, very powerful, very insightful. So anyway, I just thought that was very interesting. What is interesting, though, is apparently Israel never obeyed the command to let the land rest. Apparently, Israel never obeyed the Lord so as to let the land rest on the seventh year. And they were later judged for it. In fact, in 2 Chronicles 36, go over there with me. In 2 Chronicles 36, verses 20 and 21, it says, those who had escaped from the sword he carried away into Babylon. This speaks of the Babylonian exile. By the way, how long did the Babylonian exile last? 70 years. And this was to make up for 70 sabbatical years or seasons in which the Israelites failed to obey. And God says, okay, you are not going to let the land rest every 7 years. Well, after a period of time, finally God said, I'm going to let the land rest, and it's going to make up for those sabbatical years. And up to that point, it had accumulated to 70 years. So going back to 2 Chronicles 36:20, those who had escaped from the sword he carried away into Babylon, and they were servants to him and to his sons until the rule of the kingdom of Persia. Notice verse 21, to fulfill the word of the Lord by the mouth of Jeremiah, until the land had enjoyed its Sabbaths. Until the land had enjoyed its Sabbaths. All the days of its desolation it kept Sabbath until 70 years were complete. God gave the land its rest. He gave the land its rest. In fact, when you read Jeremiah 25, for example, verse 11, it says, this whole land will be a desolation and a horror, and these nations will serve the king of Babylon 70 years. 70 years. And he says that again in verse 12 and then in Jeremiah 29:10. And so this reference to the 70 years is basically God giving the land its sabbatical years of rest that Israel did not obey. Now, if they had, God would have blessed them. But apparently this never happened. Now, again, going back to the notes here, that this loan of forgiveness that was to occur every seventh year, we're not sure that this was obeyed either. Because if they had obeyed it, remember, there would have been no poverty within the nation. But again, there was poverty, again, because of their disobedience. So going back to the notes, this loan forgiveness was extended only to those within the covenant community and did not apply to outsiders. And Moses said, from a foreigner you may exact it, but your hand shall release whatever is yours, whatever of yours is with your brother. Now, in this verse, Moses draws a distinction between Israelites who are blessed because of their covenant relationship with the Lord and the foreigner, again, the Hebrew word nachri, who lived among them but was not part of the covenant community. Clearly, membership had its privileges. And here one observes a divinely sanctioned form of discrimination. I use that word because there is both a negative discrimination, an unjustified discrimination, a justification that is wrong in the eyes of God and people, but there is a good discrimination in which we discriminate for the right reasons. And by the way, the word discrimination is so unfortunately overused and misused. And to discriminate just simply means that one acts in such a way based upon a sense of judgment, a sense of right or wrong. In other words, you can discriminate against somebody for wrong reasons, but you can discriminate against somebody for right reasons as well. And so if you look at Galatians 6:10, Paul says, so then, while we have opportunity, let us do good to all people, and especially to those who are of the household of faith. And especially to those who are of the household of faith. Now, this is an example of treating everybody well, so nobody's done wrong in this verse. But those who are of the household of faith are given special consideration. Now, this is also true, naturally speaking. For example, if when I was growing up, my parents provided for me. They gave me food and shelter and clothing, and so they were faithful to that. Now, they didn't provide food and shelter for clothing for every kid in the neighborhood. I mean, now my mom, this is interesting. My house, my apartment where I grew up in Las Vegas, we were poor, but my mom loved to bake, and she made cookies and cakes and pies. And all my friends knew that if they came over to my house almost any day of the week, and they came into my house, that my mom would meet them with some cookies, or say, hey, there's some cake over there, help yourself, or there's a nice freshly baked pie, because my mom was very good at that. And the kids loved to come to the neighbor, come to my house, and they knew that when they came over that my mom was going to provide for them a snack. And so that when they gathered, they generally gathered at my house because they knew they would get a treat. And so my mom was good to all the kids in the neighborhood. But even though she was good to all the kids in the neighborhood, she was especially good to me, her son. And so I had special privilege being part of the family. And this is very much the same concept here. So we do good to all people, but especially to those who are of the household of the faith. And so just a very common idea here. So again, what Moses is drawing here is that they were not to exact it from their brother, but he says, "But your hand shall release whatever yours is of your brother." So again, there's a distinction here between the foreigner who is not part of the covenant community and those who are within the covenant community. Now, nothing is said about the resident alien here, the Ger, who resided among the Israelites, who enjoyed greater benefits than the foreigner because he or she had committed themselves to the Lord. The text is silent here on this, so we don't know. Now, concerning Israelites who lived in the land, Moses said, however, there will be no poor among you, since the Lord will surely bless you in the land which the Lord your God is giving you as an inheritance to possess. Now, the notion of no poor in the land does not mean economic equality through redistribution of wealth, for there would always be economic stratification. Rather, it meant that no Israelite would fall below the poverty line and be without food, shelter, or clothing. That's what the idea is there. And by the way, 1 Timothy 6:8 says that if we have food and covering with these, we shall be content. Now, that really kind of sets the bar for contentment, doesn't it? He says, if we have food and covering with these, we shall be content, because that really meets the threshold of the basic necessities of life. Now, we enjoy a hyperabundance here in America. We have a hyperabundance of resources. And yet, unfortunately, many of us have not learned to be content. We've not learned to be content with what we have. And yet, Paul here brings it down to an irreducible minimum. He says, look, if we have food and covering with these, we shall be content. And that really brings it right down to the bare basics of how our attitude should be and how, you know, what is the threshold for contentment, right? So if we have food and covering with these, we shall be content. So again, the notion of no poor in the land does not mean economic equality through redistribution of wealth. Again, for there would always be economic stratification. Rather, it meant that no Israelite would fall below the poverty guideline and be without food, shelter, or clothing. And Moses reminds his hearers again that God is the one who would bless them in the land which the Lord your God is giving you as an inheritance, a statement that he has already said several times, and he's going to repeat it, because that's how Moses flies. And he is going to keep driving that point that, look, you're in the land. God has blessed you. He's given you this abundance of resources. And don't forget it. Always remember, the Lord is the one who blessed you. Now, thinking from the divine perspective, Israel was to understand that God was the one who had liberated them from slavery. Remember Deuteronomy 5:6, where God says, I am the Lord your God who brought you out of the land of Egypt, out of the house of slavery. Because that's where they were. They were in slavery. Not only that, but God had given them the land of Canaan. Deuteronomy 4:1 says, Now, O Israel, listen to the statutes and the judgments which I am teaching you to perform, so that you may live and go in and take possession of the land which the Lord your God of your fathers is giving you. So not only had he pulled them out of slavery, but he was calling them into a land that the Lord was giving them. The Lord was also going to bless them with cities, houses, wells, and vineyards. Remember, we talked about how when they came into the land, they were going to be met with instant wealth as they drove out the wicked Canaanites who had been shown grace for 400 years and they had sinned away their day of grace. And now judgment was coming. But once the Canaanite was removed from the land, then Israel would instantly take possession of all that was in the land. And that's where Deuteronomy 6, 10 through 11 says, "Then it shall come about when the Lord your God brings you into the land which he swore to your fathers, Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, to give you, great and splendid cities which you did not build, and houses full of good things which you did not fill, and hewn cisterns which you did not dig, and vineyards and olive trees which you did not plant, and you are eat, and you eat and are satisfied." And so Israel, within a very short time, comes out of slavery, comes in to possess the land, and in taking the land, they are instantly have cities that they didn't build, houses that they can immediately walk into and occupy that are filled with things and furniture, by the way, and they would have wells that they didn't dig, and they would have herds and vineyards and crops, and instantly they would walk into a region, a land that was already set up for them to just walk in and to live in. Not only that, but God would enable them to produce wealth. Deuteronomy 8:18 says, "But you shall remember the Lord your God, for it is he who is giving you the power to make wealth. It is he who is giving you the power to make wealth, that he may confirm his covenant, which he swore to your fathers to this day." And not only would he give them the power to make wealth, but he would also bless their labor. He would also bless their labor. Deuteronomy 7:13 says, "He will love you and bless you and multiply you. And he will also bless the fruit of your womb and the fruit of your ground, your grain and your new wine and your oil, the increase of your herd and the young of your flock in the land which he swore to give to your fathers." And then Deuteronomy 11:13-15. "It shall come about, if you listen obediently to my commandments, which I am commanding you today, to love the Lord your God and to serve him with all your heart and your soul, that he will give you rain for your land." You see, God controls the rainfall. He says, "And he will give you rain for your land in its season, the early and the late rain, that you may gather in your grain and your new wine and your oil. He will give grass in your fields for your cattle, and you will eat and be satisfied." So Moses keeps reminding Israel of this. It is God who brought you out of slavery. It is God who has given you the land. And the land included cities and houses and wells and vineyards. And he enabled them to be able to produce wealth, and he blessed their labor. God is the blesser here. And Israel is the fortunate beneficiary, the recipient of God's goodness. And Moses is just going to keep driving this point. And I'll bring it up when Moses does too. So we'll keep revisiting this. See, don't you love that? Now, the wealthy were to treat fellow Israelites the way that God had treated them. By the way, I thought of 1 John 4, where it says, "We love because he first loved us. We love others because he first loved us." You see, when we come to understand and appreciate the love of God, then naturally that's going to open our hearts to be loving towards other people, even those that are hostile to us, even those that seek our harm. You see, and so we can come to love others because he first loved us. And that's the proper order, that we, when we receive from the Lord and we understand that we are the recipients of his love and his blessing and his kindness and his goodness and his grace and his mercy and all that he would bestow upon us, then we can turn around and we can be that way towards other people. And so you have to start with that right attitude. And that's why Moses is concerned with the heart. And he keeps coming back to this issue, and he keeps reminding them that God is the one who liberated you. He gave you the land. He blessed your socks off. He gave you the power to make wealth. And he has given you this blessing, production here. And so again, the wealthy Israelites were to treat fellow Israelites the way that God had treated them, with a generous heart and an open hand. You see, that giving attitude was to be a part of their daily activity. And this was something that would just naturally flow. It would just naturally flow out. And I had a few verses here in Psalm 69:33. It says, "God hears the cry of the poor, for the Lord hears the needy and does not despise his who are prisoners." And Deuteronomy 10:18-19, it says that he executes justice for the orphan and the widow, and shows his love for the alien by giving him food and clothing. "So show your love for the alien, for you were aliens in the land of Egypt." So show your love for the alien, for you were aliens in the land of Egypt. In other words, remember your history. Remember your past. Remember what God brought you out of. And let that become a motivator to you with regard to the less fortunate that you come into contact with regard to how you see them and how you bless them. Now, this ideal situation of no poor in the land was possible for the nation, but was conditioned on their obedience to the Lord's directives. You see, Moses made this clear by the following conditional clause, in which he said, if you listen obediently to the voice of the Lord your God to observe carefully all this commandment, which I am commanding you today. So God's ideal concerning the poor could be actualized. It could have been actualized if his people would walk in his will. The blessed of the Lord were called, and they were called not to hoard their wealth, but to be generous as he had been generous. You see, they were not to hoard their wealth. They were not to close it off. They were not to keep it locked away in a bank somewhere. They were to put it forth in the community. And so this would stimulate the community. You see, God's concerned about economics, and he's concerned about how wealth is used by those who have it. You see, and again, we're stewards, just like they're stewards. So the blessed of the Lord were called not to hoard their wealth, but to be generous as he himself had been generous. And God would honor such open-handed behavior by blessing his people as they would serve as conduits of his grace to others. You see, they would serve as conduits of his grace to others. For the obedient Israelite, Moses said, for the Lord your God will bless you as he has promised you, and you will lend to many nations, but you will not borrow, and you will rule over many nations, but they will not rule over you. You see, if Israel obeyed the Lord concerning their generosity toward those in the covenant community, then God would bless them greatly, which would give them economic superiority over other nations. But the Israelites were to be mindful about learning and living God's word. You see, Moses said, if there is a poor man with you, one of your brothers, in any of your towns in your land, which the Lord your God is giving you, you shall not harden your heart nor close your hand from your poor brother. But you shall freely open your hand to him and shall generously lend him sufficient for his needs and whatever he lacks. Now, it was inevitable that a wealthy Israelite would encounter a poor person, and when faced with the prospect of helping the impoverished, he was to be generous. And what Moses describes is, in effect, a loan. Let's be clear about what the context is here. Now, this is different than giving. Remember, the tithe was a gift. It was given to the poor in the community, especially the one that was taken every third year. That was given. And that was very open-handed and helping the poor. What we're talking about here is, in effect, a loan. So what Moses describes is a loan to the poor person with the expectation that it would be repaid. Now, this was different than the gift given through the tithe, which we talked about last time. And the help given to the poor was to be sufficient for his need and not his greed, as I mentioned before. Now, a study in Scripture, and I spent some time on this, a study in Scripture reveals that some people were poor because of bad choices such as laziness. Laziness. And you can see this, for example, like in Proverbs 6, 9 through 11, which says, how long will you lie down, O sluggard? When will you arise from your sleep? A little sleep, a little slumber, a little folding of the hands to rest. Your poverty will come on you like a vagabond and your need like an armed man. Or Proverbs 13, 18, which says, poverty and shame will come to him who neglects discipline. To him who neglects discipline, but he who regards reproof will be honored. And other passages. So a person could be poverty-stricken because of laziness or even alcoholism, for example. Notice Proverbs 23, 21. It says, for the heavy drinker and the glutton will come to poverty. The heavy drinker and the glutton will come to poverty, and drowsiness will clothe one with rags. And one could even become could come to poverty because he chases after dreams. He's a daydreamer, we might say. And Proverbs 28:19 says, he who tills his land will have plenty of food. You see, there's the hard worker. He who tills his land, who works hard, he will have plenty of food. But he who follows empty pursuits will have poverty in plenty. And I like the way the Net Bible translates it, because they translate it as he who chases daydreams. So to the person who is lazy or an alcoholic or just a daydreamer, well, they're not going to employ a good, strong work ethic, and so they are going to be stricken with poverty due to their own bad choices. However, what Moses seems to be describing here among the poor seems to be those who were poor through no fault of their own, such as those who may have been even robbed. And there's some examples here. For example, in Micah 2, 1 and 2, it says, "Woe to those who scheme iniquity, who work out evil on their beds. When morning comes, they do it, for it is in their power, for it is in the power of their hands." Notice what these wicked, wealthy people do. It says they covet fields and then seize them, and houses and take them away. They rob a man and his house, a man and his inheritance. So it could be that somebody becomes poor through no fault of their own, such as being robbed, or maybe just through a bad investment. Maybe their equipment broke down. Maybe their cattle died. The oxen that was used to plow the fields. I don't know. The text doesn't say. But looking at other passages of Scripture, it would seem to imply that the loans that were being offered here were given to people who had a good work ethic, who had opportunity, but just lacked the means. That seems to be what's going on here. One can't be dogmatic, but that seems to be the case. Now, it's possible that giving money to the poor may be harmful if it facilitates a destructive drug addiction or fosters laziness. And certainly, we don't want to do that. Scripture promotes a strong work ethic. Paul says in 2 Thessalonians 3:10 that if anyone is not willing to work, then he is not to eat. If anyone is not willing to work, then he is not to eat. And the Bible definitely promotes a strong work ethic. And this assumes that a person is able to work and that the work is available. Helping the poor in society is always a good thing, but compassion must be governed by wisdom. Compassion must be governed by wisdom. Now, in this context, and we're almost done, we have just a few more minutes. In this context, it appears that Moses assumes a person is impoverished through no fault of his own and needs a loan to help until his situation improves. When the need was legitimate, God called the wealthy to be generous. But God was concerned about the heart and wanted his people to act on right motives. And Moses said, "Beware that there is no base thought in your heart, saying, 'The seventh year, the year of remission, is near,' and your eye is hostile toward your poor brother, and you give him nothing to eat, and then he may cry to the Lord against you, and it will be a sin in you." The concern here was that the needy brother would ask for help near the seventh year, just prior to the time when the loans were automatically forgiven. And the loan would in that moment become a gift, with the lender losing all hope of repayment. If the wealthy Israelite failed to obey the Lord and withheld the loan to the poor person, then the poor may cry to the Lord in such a situation, which meant that he would take his case before the judge of all the earth. And in that moment, it would be a sin to the one who was stingy. Here, it is revealed that the poor had legal rights in God's theocratic kingdom, which is revealed in other passages of Scripture, and we looked at those previously. The cure of a hostile attitude toward the poor was a generous heart and an open hand. You see, this was a soul sickness, as it were, within the heart of the person who came to possess wealth, the wealth that God had blessed him with. And so this wound up becoming a soul sickness that caused him to hoard his wealth. And so the cure for this sickness, this hostile attitude toward the poor, was to have a generous heart and an open hand. So there's intentionality here. There is an act of obedience. The cure was to be self-administered. Failure to be kind and open-handed would bring about God's cursing, but obedience would secure his blessings. So you see, God sees what's going on, and he promises to reward. Again, to look at a few verses, Deuteronomy 7, 11 through 13, Deuteronomy 7, 11 through 13, which says, "Therefore you shall keep the commandment and the statutes and the judgments which I am commanding you today, And then it shall come about, because you listen to these judgments and keep them and do them, that the Lord your God will keep with you his covenant and his loving kindness, which he swore to your fathers. He will love you and bless you and multiply you. He will also bless the fruit of your womb and the fruit of your ground, your grain, your new wine, your oil, the increase of your herd and the young of your flock in the land which he swore to give to your fathers. Deuteronomy 11, 13 through 15. Deuteronomy 11, 13 through 15. It shall come about, if you listen obediently to my commands, which I am commanding you today, to love the Lord your God and to serve him with all your heart and with all your soul, that he will give you the rain for your land in its season, the early and the late rain, that you may gather in your grain and your new wine and your oil. And he will give grass in your fields for your cattle, and you will eat and be satisfied. And then verses 26 through 28, a verse we've hit before, but hey, let's hit it again. He says, "See, I am setting before you today a blessing and a curse. The blessing, if you listen to the commandments of the Lord your God, which I am commanding you today. And the curse, if you do not listen to the commandments of the Lord your God, but turn aside from the way which I am commanding you today by following other gods which you have not known." So you see, the ball was in their court. And if they obeyed the Lord, God would see it and God would bless them. He would honor that. So rather than be stingy, Moses said, "You shall generously give to him, and your heart shall not be grieved when you give to him, because for this thing the Lord your God will bless you in all your work and in all your undertakings." The wealthy Israelite knew that God was watching him. He should have known it, that God was watching him, and that God would bless him for his obedience. And because the nation as a whole never fully obeyed all of God's laws, there would always be poor among them. And Moses said this in verse 11, "For the poor will never cease to be in your land. Therefore I command you, saying, you shall freely open your hand to your brother, to your needy and poor in your land." Failure to be generous was unbecoming the Israelite, who claimed to be the Lord's servant, who represented his values in everyday life. You see, that being stingy was unattractive. It was unbecoming the Israelite who claimed to be the Lord's servant. Because remember, the Lord had liberated them from slavery, given them the land, given them wealth, given them the means of production, and blessed their socks off, and yet they're going to hoard God's blessing. Well, that's a contradiction, isn't it? It's very unattractive, by the way. And so in all this, we see how Israelites were to have a theological perspective. I love this. Were to have a theological perspective that governed their daily lives, even how they handled money and treated others within the community, how they handled money. Now, in closing out here, last paragraph, though there are no theocracies today, we are not under the Mosaic law. This does not speak to us directly. This spoke to the Israelite and not even to the foreigner outside the land. This spoke to the Israelite under the law. So though there are no theocracies today, many Old and New Testament passages reflect the heart of God toward the poor, needy, and most vulnerable in society. Scripture reveals that God has compassion on the poor, that he helps the poor, that he is a refuge, that he saves those who cry out to him, that he rescues the afflicted, that he provides for them, and that he lifts them up, and that he seeks justice for them. And there's lots of scriptures there for that. Helping the poor is a demonstration of grace, for being gracious to the poor means listening to their cry for help and giving to meet their need and defending their social rights. Such actions honor the Lord. And I love Proverbs 19:17, which says that he will repay him for his good deed. He will repay him. Again, Proverbs 19:17 says, "One who is gracious to a poor man lends to the Lord." Okay, so when they are gracious to the poor, it's actually like making a loan to God, and God, and it says, "and he will repay him for his good deed." You see, God sees what is going on when somebody is gracious and giving to others. 1 John 3:17, John wrote, "Whoever has the world's good and sees his brother in need and closes his heart against him, how does the love of God abide in him?" And Paul wrote, "Instruct those who are rich in this world, in this present world, not to be conceited or to fix their hope on the uncertainty of riches, but on God, who richly supplies us with all things to enjoy. Instruct them to do good, to be rich in good works, to be generous and ready to share, storing up for themselves the treasure of a good foundation for the future, so that they may take hold of that which is life indeed. Okay, well, it took me a little more than an hour to get through that, but hopefully we have a little bit of a better understanding of that. So that is going to close out Deuteronomy 15, 1 through 11. Deuteronomy 15, 1 through 11.